Welcome to the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb, leading the business conversation right here on SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Greg at 7 o'clock. It was in June of 2007, almost 19 years ago to the day, that the first iPhone went on sale for $499. This would help launch the smartphone revolution as we know it today and create trillions of dollars in market value. Certainly some interesting times to reflect on. I'm Jimmy Moraha. This is the SAFM Market Update. Let's get you up to date. Coming up on the show today, we speak to the founder and chief executive officer at 91 Asset Manager to take a look at their results for the financial year that ended March 2026. We get a sense of how that asset manager has performed throughout the year and what it is that they are looking at the moment. We'll also speak to the Johannesburg Stock Exchange on Canal Plus's listing on the JSE today, this making it the first French company to list on the local bourse, but also the secondary listing that Canal Plus has pursued after the primary listing in the London, or on the London Stock Exchange rather. We speak to the team at Luxie around their energy and carbon performance certificates that are now part of a recent partnership that they struck up. We're going to get a sense of what that means for homeowners that are looking to transition to greener solutions to power their homes. Then we have a conversation with the team at Allan Gray looking at investing through disruptive times, especially in the age of AI. We try and make sense of how long-term investing is being shaped by emerging trends. Before we wrap up the show with an executive lounge conversation, we speak to the founder and chief executive officer of Hazile Group, Dr. Pindi Lemsomi, about that business, about her career and where it is that career sits today.
The day's markets, understanding the moves and making smarter investment calls.
As always, that's where we kick off the show with a sense of market movements. I'm joined on the line by Otto 1890's David Shapiro to take a look at market movements and see if we can make sense of them. Uncle David, lovely having you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. You're in the US at the moment. ADP numbers came out today. Are you surprised that they came out beating estimates?
I think the market's surprised because markets are down today. We've seen the US markets take a little bit of a knock. And I think this has created the argument now that we will or could get a rate increase, particularly with inflation sticky because of higher oil prices. So I think that's what the market's responding to. For the first time in a number of days now, the S&P is down, the Nasdaq's under a bit of pressure, and I think all relating to very well, when I say strong, they were in line with expectations, but I think there is a view that the labor market's under pressure. But Jimmy, no sense of that at all. I think US markets, even if you looked at the numbers that came out of the US today, some of the other data, still very steady. That was the services number. So interest rates there, we've seen the 10-year bonds kick up, markets a little nervy now. There's no sense of an end to the war as well, I think, which is another factor weighing on the markets.
Uncle David, when we look at the equity markets, obviously they would feel that risk off sentiment and those jobs numbers and that labor market would have markets quite concerned. But I'm looking at the Rand as well against the US dollar. The Rand's been able to hold firm. If I look at the US dollar, perhaps against other major currencies as well, the likes of the euro, the British pound, the dollar has been showing some signs of life and fighting back there as well. The dollar index isn't where we've known it to be, but it is also very indicative of the fact that the market does have a bit of caution around what's happening in the US.
Oh yeah, I can't reconcile all of that. It's very difficult to make sense of it, particularly the Rand. It could be that we're attracting money. I'm watching our bond market very carefully. Yes, it's been under a little bit of pressure, but the rates are still pretty steady. If you look at long-dated bonds there, I think we're holding up incredibly well. The JSC is feeling more pressure than the bond market. So you've got a JSC, and this is where the conundrum is. This is where the difficulty comes trying to reconcile this, because you've got a relatively strong rand at 1630. The bond market is holding up. When I say holding up, it's still doing pretty well and attracting money, and rates are okay. But then if you get our equity market under a lot of pressure, particularly those sensitive to interest rate hikes and consumer stocks, and then you've also got a gold market that's hovering. You know, and that's where you can't reconcile that with the dollar. With the dollar under pressure, you would expect gold to go up. But Jimmy, that's where's it trading now? I think under 4,400 relative to where it was, you know, over 5,000 at the beginning of the year, and certainly as the war broke out. So I think those are, you know, gold's just a little over 4,000. So platinum's under pressure. So that's where we're having difficulty trying to balance these two different markets. But you're right in, you know, in sensing that the Rand is holding up pretty well.
Uncle David, that balance and that confusion, that's not something that just you and I are experiencing. Markets are clearly experiencing it as well. Because when I look at the other equities markets, granted, Asian markets would have been trading earlier in the day and they might not have had the chance to fully react to the US jobs numbers, but they had a green day. By and large, the Nikkei in Tokyo are having a green day as well. So the look through there is, you know, the markets are now behaving almost independently. Each economy, each sector, each market behaving on its own now.
Very difficult. You know, it's a lot of confusion. You know, there's no kind of connection between the various markets. Look, the Asian markets, if you look at South Korea and you look at Taiwan, particularly because of their exposure to AI semiconductors, they've done pretty well. But Tencent came under pressure today quite a bit, which took down Naspers and Process. But I mean, overall, those, as you say, you know, Asian markets are holding up. And you never know what's going to happen, you know, from one day to the next. I think the one thing we're watching very, very carefully is that SpaceX will be listed next Friday on June the 12th. And this is the start of many IPOs that are coming to the market. When I say many, you know, we're looking forward to Anthropic and also to OpenAI. Also, Alphabet has gone on to the equity market to raise money, not going to the debt market. So there's still huge amount of talk around the future of AI. There is many. In fact, the media is almost unanimous. Bearish and starting to warn about bubbles again, and this can't go on, and so on. So you've got a lot of conversations going there, kind of causing confusion in the market. But it's going to be very interesting to see how SpaceX performs. It's Jimmy, this is going from 0 to 1.8 trillion or 1.75 trillion. You know, it's got no value on the market now. So when it does list, that's what its underlying market's going to be. They're raising $75 billion, which is not an incredible amount of money relative to the size of the company. But how markets respond and how investors respond, it's going to be very interesting. There's going to be as many short sellers as there are buyers. So I think we've got a very interesting week next week as we prepare for Mr. Musk's, you know, shot on Mars.
Certainly lots to look forward to as we go into next week. For now, this week, the markets are still holding steady. We are still finding that there is still perhaps some value in the market and perhaps some value in the AI trade. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks as always to Otto 1890's David Shapiro for joining us to take a look at markets and help us make sense of what might be driving them.
Look, being able to say my partner and I have traveled to 52 countries in 5 years is a great conversation starter. But that's not why I'm at Land of Standard Bank Private. It's for moments like these. Babe, will you marry me?
Yes!
It's not what you do that matters, but who you do it for. Get up to 50% back in UCount Rewards points on domestic and international flights. Search UCount Travel Mall to find out more. Standard Bank. It can be. Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
With $650 billion projected to be spent on AI-related infrastructure projects in 2026 alone, are global markets witnessing the early stages of a tech revolution, or is it investor exuberance at its best? Tune into the SAFM Market Update this evening at 6:45 as Nshalati Hlungwane, a manager in The institutional clients team at Allan Gray joins me to discuss what long-term investors can learn from past tech disruption eras and explains why valuations still matter in the age of AI. Brought to you by Allan Gray. More than 50 years of long-term investing. Allan Gray is an authorized FSP.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
91 Limited, the largest asset manager on the African continent, reported their numbers for the financial year ended 31 March 2026. Now, at the time of reporting those numbers, assets under management were just shy of the 4 trillion rand mark at 3.9 odd trillion rand, depending on which currency and exchange rates you are using. We're going to be taking a look at these numbers in a bit more detail with founder and chief executive officer Hendrik du Toit. He joins me on the line now to see what we make of the performance. Umeni, lovely having you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. Another strong year from an asset management point of view, growth from a business point of view, some really positive metrics, net inflows just shy of the £3 billion mark. How do you reflect on the 2026 year that was?
Jimmy, good afternoon and good afternoon to the listeners. It's a privilege to be here with you. Well, we're happy that the past financial year was a good one. We would have liked some strong flows in the second half of the year because we did quite a bit of the work in the first half. But the American president went to war in the Middle East. Conditions changed towards the end of the year. And we had one or two wins postponed to the new year and one or two unexpected losses. So the second half of the year was a bit slower, although we earned more money because the book was bigger. So all in all, good year. 91 is on the front foot, but the important point is emerging markets are starting to attract capital, and that's 60% of what we do. Obviously, South Africa is one, but here we are a domestic player. But if you look at our international business, the attractiveness of emerging markets is very, very important, and we're starting to see a real interest there, particularly because the Chinese and Korean and Taiwanese tech sectors, particularly the hardware side, starting to attract attention from international capital, and that obviously buoys the prospective returns. But we're back in a world with very narrow markets, i.e. very big stocks taking all the action, like SpaceX now, like OpenAI, like Anthropic. I mean, these guys have built a $1 trillion business in under 10 years, all of them. So that is taking a little bit of the shine away. So it's no wild bull market. We have to work hard, but conditions are better than 2 or 3 years ago.
Well, Manny, how are you feeling about that narrowing market? I mean, from an asset manager's point of view, especially a global asset manager the size of 91, returns are very important, but managing risk and managing concentration risk is equally important. We've been hearing of this AI trade for the longest time. Does that have you concerned that there is too much focus perhaps in one sector at the moment, and that's creating a lot more risk than necessary?
I think, Jimmy, we've got to distinguish two things. One is the kind of capital or financial rush into everything AI at very high valuations. That's probably quite dangerous, but I think there's, as David Solomon of Goldman Sachs said yesterday, more greed than fear in the market, which means it'll probably drive the market up. But at some point, this thing is gonna unwind. As a professional investment manager looking after the retirement of people for the next 20 or 30 years, but often being measured on the last month or the last quarter, it's quite difficult because we tend to spread the bets. We tend to risk manage our portfolios to make sure they're resilient and they're robust. You know, the highly concentrated ones capturing these sexy themes will do very well compared to us. We just have to keep explaining to our clients what we do for them and why we're there. And I do believe, however, that once the market gets into a deconcentration phase, that there will be enormous alpha to be had, and therefore the value of your active manager will be very high relative to your passive. But the third point that's important, and probably the most important for the listeners, AI as a technology is changing the way we work, we live, we run our businesses. And if we don't adapt or use it, we will be left behind. And I think it's also an important point for us as a country to make sure we expose the citizens to opportunities. And this obviously starts with just giving everybody enough bandwidth. But we really have to, the world is changing and we need to adapt.
Well, Manny, speaking of the changes and how it is that businesses are having to adapt, the last time you and I caught up, we were in the middle of concluding a Sanlam transaction that concluded in the previous financial year. Thankfully, all of that dust has settled and that business has been added to the 91 business. Take me through what that integration and that completion now means for you as an asset manager.
Thank you very much, Jimmy. I think this is a really significant transaction for us because we don't normally grow with mergers and acquisitions. We like to grow organically. But here we had the largest distributor of savings product on the African continent, who happens to have been a client, come to us and say, would you like to partner with us in the field of active asset management? We'd like you to buy our business, which had its growth challenges, and then be our in-house active manager. That has enormous upside for 91, in particular because the portfolio that they came across was largely fixed income, which grows our fixed income footprint in South Africa, which doesn't expose us to the fact that equity markets are probably quite high and gives us a diversified revenue stream and a great partner who also committed to backing some of our new ideas with some investment capital over time. So I think that partnership is going to be great. It's settled down. It hasn't disrupted our investment operation because actually not many people came across, and the people who came across were excellent people and, you know, additive to the 91 proposition. So we are very happy with that. In the past year, we also concluded two other important partnerships. One was to offer our products or our investment capabilities via an ETF exchange-traded fund wrappers in partnership with the world's second largest ETF distributor, that is State Street Global Investment Management, which then saves us the money for building our own ETF infrastructure. Now, ETF is exactly like a mutual fund. It's just a different way through which investors access our capabilities. And then the third and very important one is the creation of 91 Asia in partnership with a Singapore-based alternative investment manager, ARC Avenue Asset Management, which really exposes us to growth companies in Asia and knowledge of the venture industry, which will then ultimately, given the listings boom that's happening right now in Hong Kong, Singapore and China, will really give us access to investment insights we wouldn't have had and on-the-ground knowledge. So, you know, this has been a big year of setting the business up for growth, not necessarily delivering all that growth this year, although 12% isn't shabby. We think we've set up the business for some interesting opportunities in the years to come.
Well, Manny, before I let you go, part of setting up that growth strategy involves looking at the business internally as well. You took a decision to increase the share buyback program from the £30 million initially announced last year in March to £55 million at this stage. Take me through the rationale behind that, especially for a business like 91 that has the flexibility to be able to take this decision given the size of your balance sheet and where you're positioned.
I think we generate a lot of cash. Most businesses earn money, but it's not cash. It's tied up in stock or in capital expenditure. The asset management business is very cash generative. And we believe that our shareholders should share in that cash we generate, either through dividends and buybacks. And when our share price is at an attractive level, we tend to apply capital to buy that back, reduce the number of shares, and therefore the claim of the future profits by a long-term holder increases. And please note that the people of 91 earn approximately 30% of the business, 29.4 as we speak after the Sanlam dilution. So we care about the capital, and we are long-term holders, and we have a few, we have long-term shareholders with us. We're happy to increase their claim on future dividends, and that's really what we're doing here. So that's to the benefit of our long-term investors.
Thinking about the long-term investment landscape and navigating that as the largest asset manager on the African continent, one of the largest asset managers in the world at this stage. The team at 91 having another robust year. By my estimates, as it stands, we should be north of the 4 trillion rand mark in assets under management, but we'll await that confirmation from the team at 91 directly. For now, we'll leave this conversation on that note. Thanks so much to founder and chief executive officer Hendrik du Toit for joining us to take us through the numbers for the financial year that was.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Canal Plus, the company that bought over MultiChoice a couple of months ago, officially as of today had its secondary listing on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. Now, the primary listing for Canal Plus currently sits on the London Stock Exchange, and the decision to have the secondary listing come to the Johannesburg Stock Exchange is a significant milestone for the French telecoms operator. We're going to be taking a look at this in a bit more detail with the head of deals and origination at the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, Samuel Mokorosi. He joins me on the line now to see what we make of these developments. Sam, lovely having you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. Certainly a landmark moment for the first French company to ever list on the JSE.
Indeed. With a market cap of over 55 billion, hopefully climbing to 60 billion rand soon, we are really thrilled to welcome Canal Plus to the main board of the Johannesburg Stock Exchange.
Now, Sam, for those that aren't familiar with how the listing environment works, we have primary listings, we have secondary listings, and although this is a secondary listing from Canal Plus's perspective, we are not their primary exchange of trade. What does this mean for the Johannesburg Stock Exchange to be able to have such a large company decide to use elect to use our exchange for its secondary listing?
Yeah, so this is part of a deliberate strategy that we have embarked on all the way since Anglo-American and other globally competitive South African companies asked the government to have the ability to raise capital offshore. And so, you know, companies like Mondi and BHP have been listed in London with strong South African roots since probably the late 90s. What we are seeing in this wave is really global companies choosing to dual list, secondary list on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, not just for vibes, but importantly for capital, access to our deep and liquid capital pools. And so Canal Plus joins a list of other companies from all over the world, like Greencoat Renewables from Ireland. We've seen Supermarket Income REIT. We've seen Primary Healthcare Properties. We've seen Assura, all inward list onto the JSE from Europe to really cement the JSE's reputation as a globally competitive capital market infrastructure that allows for capital to really invest in globally interesting opportunities.
Sam, you mentioned that this is part of a deliberate strategy that the JSE has been embarking on for quite some time. And I want to get your thoughts on what it means to position the JSE as a globally competitive exchange. We are already the best exchange on the African continent, but to now realign that and reaffirm our openness to the global markets, what does that then do for attractiveness of investments into not only the exchange, but into South Africa?
100%. So we are seeing that capital is becoming increasingly globalized, which is no surprise. And so our action in that is we have signed multiple MOUs with exchanges like Saudi Arabia. We've onboarded Hong Kong as a secondary listing venue, Saudi Arabia, as well as I've mentioned, lots of exchanges in Europe, lots of exchanges in North America. And what that does is that it allows South African investors, of which probably most of your listeners are investors in the stock market, because we all either have pension funds or insurance products, and that money all goes back onto the exchange. So this is really a national asset for the man on the street, for the retail investor going through their channels. But what it means is that we as investors then have access to world-class companies that we can invest in. But your question also asked about inward investment into South Africa. And what we do find is that because we have a well-established capital market, it allows for foreign direct investment into South Africa, where we've seen global companies look at South Africa and say, this is really interesting. Now, for me, as an employee of the exchange, it is unfortunate, for example, when we see companies like DP World buy Imperial and Idealists, or companies like Walmart buy Massmart and Massmart delists. But it does also talk to the fact that we are attracting capital from Dubai, like in DP World, from the US, in the likes of Walmart. And South Africa is open for business, and we welcome the foreign direct investment. Of course, I'd wish they'd stop delisting our companies when they do that. But, you know, capital flows in that way. And so the exchange becomes not just a platform for offshore companies accessing South African capital markets and giving opportunities for South African investors, but the exchange also becomes a facilitator of foreign direct investment, which our economy is so desperate for.
Sam, before I let you go, I want to get your thoughts on how we grow local listings. We are seeing an increase in exposure to global markets, but it is also important at the same time to encourage our own local businesses to pursue listings on the exchange and to grow their own footprints locally. How do we do that, and how do we ensure that we position our own local companies to be attractive to global markets?
100%. And this is swimming against the tide, because even if you look globally, what we're seeing is that listed companies are becoming bigger and bigger. I mean, big listings coming in the US, like SpaceX, Anthropic, etc., being touted to list at over $1 trillion. I mean, that's unheard of. And so what are we doing about the small caps? So we as the JSE are have a whole host of programs. We've changed our listing requirements to make it easier for small caps to get onto the board and stay on the board without reducing investor protections. We have opened products such as JSE private placements, which allows a capital raise while still unlisted, so that companies can grow with the ambition of someday listing. And even our SME development program helps companies grow, get access to market, raise capital, go through some acceleration training, etc. But we've also been speaking to policymakers and regulators in Pretoria around making life easier for small caps to raise capital, including supporting retail investors who are historically good supporters of small caps. So, for example, we've seen through some of our engagements with government, the tax-free savings allowance on an annual basis being increased from 36,000 Rand to 46,000 Rand in the February budget speech. And that's just one step of many that we are working with policy and regulators to really start to make a difference for small caps to raise capital, whether unlisted or listed, and then remain listed as South Africa Inc. of course really needs small companies to do well to deal with our unemployment problem, amongst many other issues.
Celebrating the first French company to list on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, but also reminding local companies that it is important that their businesses grow and attract investments as well. We'll leave the conversation on that note. That was Head of Deals and Origination at the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, Samuel Mokorosi, who joined us to take a look at Canal Plus's listing on the JSE today and what it means for the local bourse as well as for the local markets.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This segment is brought to you by Alan Gray. More than 50 years of long-term investing, Alan Gray is an authorized financial services provider. Now, investing in these difficult times with all of the moving trends can certainly make for some interesting thoughts and decisions that have to go into your investment profile in your investment thesis, especially if you're looking at long-term investing. We're going to be taking a look at this in a bit more detail with a manager from the institutional clients team at Allan Gray. Inshallah Ditlungwane joins me on the line now to see what we make of long-term investing through interesting times. Inshallah, lovely having you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. What lessons can we draw from previous periods of technological disruption and market excitement that might be relevant in today's AI boom?
Hi, Jimmy. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak to you. So I think when we think about technology, we typically think of, you know, what we're currently using now isn't like smartphones, computers. But when I was looking at this, I went all the way back to the 1800s when, you know, British railways were just become a thing. And like more recently, we had the telecoms boom as well in the late 90s. And what has shown, what I've seen there is that there definitely is a pattern that sort of emerges when there is a technological disruption. And I think some of the lessons and things we can see from there is in terms of similarities, when there is a new technology, there's definitely a lot of market excitement, a lot of exuberance that goes with that. And it ends up actually driving market returns, which is actually something we're seeing right now, even with AI and the mega tech stocks. And then the other thing that follows is the interest behind that is in order to unlock the technologies that a lot of a large capital expenditure follows that. So that's something that we've seen, that I've seen in like looking at, for example, the railways back in the 1800s and more recently with our telecom, with the telecom boom. However, I do think it's just worth noting that there are also differences as well. So one of the biggest differences, for example, when it comes to AI versus what has happened in the past is just like the level and the speed of adoption. It's unprecedented. Like, for example, when you think about the smartphone, it took about 12 years to get adopted, whereas AI is projected to take about 2 to 3 years. And the other thing that I think most people are already starting to experience is just the level of autonomy that AI operates with, whereas previously it was just technologies were just automating existing processes. So I think that's just something to just draw on just in terms of what's happened historically and what we've seen in terms of like trends when it comes to technological disruptions.
And Shalati, when we look back at history, how have we played this in the past? How have markets navigated the disruption? What's the playbook here?
Yeah, so I mean, I've sort of touched on it already where I spoke to about how the new idea emerges and then that's followed by exuberance and, you know, enthusiasm builds and excitement builds and followed by the technological acceleration. And what then that, I mean, not technological, but capital expenditure acceleration. And what that's doing is then actually allowing that physical infrastructure to sort of take hold to unlock this technology. And that's where it gets a bit interesting because the levels of that capital expenditure have got real implications for investors and for returns, because typically, because of the level that they're at, you would need enough time post that capital expenditure to allow for the returns to actually to justify that level of expenditure. And then the other thing as well that is interesting is, you know, typically the people who are the first movers are not necessarily the people who will benefit. So I think what's interesting is we've seen that previously, and that's the big question, I think, right now when it comes to AI, is we're seeing all of this CapEx expenditure, but we don't actually know what that actually means. It's still yet to be answered, this question of whether that capital expenditure is sustainable, but more importantly, will the returns justify that level of capital expenditure that we're seeing, that $650 billion that's projected for this year, for example.
Inshallah, when we look at these market narratives, the AI conversation has been with us for quite some time. It's a very, very dominant narrative at the moment. How does this now affect how we see things like valuations, and why is it important to look at valuations when markets are in this state?
I think, Jimmy, sometimes what happens, and maybe that's what we kind of seeing now, where we're seeing, you know, valuations at the levels that we're seeing them, is that there sometimes happens to be a disconnection between what the market is valuing a share at versus what it actually is worth. And I think that's where the valuation-driven investment philosophy actually is essential, because now you actually need to understand is this business actually worth what the market is saying it's worth? And that can only be done by fundamental research and bottom-up understanding of what are the key drivers of this business and what opportunities are there for that business, and is it justified to be valued at that level? So those valuation-driven processes is essential at this stage, and it's an important part of the investing process, I think.
Chalati, before I let you go, I want to take a look at some other aspects of the investing process, as you mention it, from a long-term investment point of view. How do you navigate this uncertainty? How do you identify the opportunities within this uncertainty?
I think uncertainty is something that I'm sure other people have already mentioned. It's actually something that we need to embrace, and I think uncertainty is an important part of an investment process, because what it does do is that it allows for dislocations to happen. And when those dislocations happen, that's where we actually able to see opportunities, especially if you are a fundamental driven entity or business or asset manager, because when you see it allows you to identify where the pockets of opportunity actually are, where the pockets of value are. So I think uncertainty is real, and I think we're all struggling with it. But I also think the thing where we can actually take comfort in is that it is in that uncertainty where we're actually able to identify opportunities that can lead to sustained returns for our clients.
Embracing uncertainty and adapting to the ever-changing trends that we find ourselves in. Nshalati Hlungwane, Institutional Clients Team Member at Allan Gray, joining us to take a look at how it is that we invest through disruptive times.
The segment was brought to you by Allan Gray. More than 50 years of long-term investing, Allan Gray is an authorized financial services provider.
With over 5 decades of investing experience, Allan Gray remains focused on building long-term wealth for clients by pursuing long-term returns without taking undue risk. Allan Gray, more than 50 years of long-term investing. Allan Gray is an authorized financial services provider.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Flip the switch to solar and improve your home's energy efficiency with Luxi, powered by the Standard Bank Group. In a world where South Africans are increasingly being forced to consider energy-efficient solutions for their homes, the team at Luxi has come up with an innovative way to ensure that homeowners feel that they're getting value for money with their home solutions. We're going to be taking a look at this in a bit more detail with the executive head at the Luxi platform within Standard Bank South Africa, Mark du Plessis. He joins me on the line to see what to make of it. Mark, lovely having you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. We've spoken about this in the past around how valuable home solar systems can be for homeowners, but take me through your latest partnership with the South African Energy Development Institute.
Yes, yeah, so thank you, Jimmy. So NEDI is part of the Department of Energy and Electricity, and what we've done is we're working with them to focus very much on helping homes get more visibility, specifically solar homes to start. So people really kind of often struggle to understand, you know, what benefits they're having. Yes, their electricity bill is something they can understand, as in has it dropped. But furthermore, what we're realizing is that homes you have chosen to invest haven't really got the information with regards to, for example, how much solar versus how much grid usage are they having. Getting a clearer view on, you know, the split between these two. And then also trying to help them understand whether this investment has in fact been a good one for the family. So it's really about taking the customer to another level of visibility after making a large investment into solar for their homes.
Now, Mark, part of this visibility includes an energy and carbon certificate that homeowners would now be able to obtain as a result of this partnership. Why, as a homeowner, would I be interested in a certificate like this?
So really what we're trying to help homeowners understand is the decision they've taken, firstly, is a good one, not only for their family and their cost savings, but also for their own carbon emissions as a family. So what we're doing is really trying to help people really solidify the fact that the decision was a good one. But second, and most importantly, it also gives them something tangible. Say, for example, if they want to sell their home, there's something tangible to really help the buyer understand better what this performance looks like for the solar system that's already been installed on the home. And it really gives a lot more measurability to something that's often quite difficult to, you know, to come to grips with.
Mark, speaking of that measurability, let's take a look at the value that these systems add. I mean, we've spoken about, obviously, the initial cost that goes into installing these solutions in your home, depending on the size of solution you're looking at. The Looksee platform has quite a very detailed breakdown on the different types of home solutions that you've got. But beyond this, the value that then is added, whether it's from a property value perspective, whether it's from a savings perspective, where it relates to your bills, or whether it is just from ensuring that you're realizing the true value of the system. Take us through just some of those parts as they relate to the systems and as they relate to your partnership with Syneti.
Yeah, thank you. So what we're really trying to do is help homes realize that value. So there's a couple of key metrics that we offer in the certificate. One is really an estimated savings over a 10-year period. So a customer, again, the existing homeowner or someone who's maybe wanting to buy that property can see, okay, what am I going to save if I've got a similar size family with a similar behavior as the incumbent family? And what can I save over a 10-year period? A second point to note is that regulatory requirements do not require South African homes to have energy performance certificates. But in other markets, the UK and others, it's mandated alongside a certificate of compliance. So what we chose to do is really partner with Syneti to work together on helping customers get a much better view on you know, the performance of the system and the efficiency that the home operates within. And then I guess the last point from a property value perspective, there isn't a lot of evidence that your home with a solar system would, you know, increase in value by a certain percentage. But what we have noticed in the market is that customers do favor wanting to buy a property that already maybe has a solar system or maybe even backup water. So it does help a lot with regards to, you know, further evidence that this property is, you know, has got some resilience attached to it and is already installed.
Mark, let's remind our listeners around the options that are available for these solar solutions. There was a time where these solutions were out of reach of consumers. Financing was difficult. These solutions were expensive. Now, I know the team at Looksee have been working hard to ensure that affordability is addressed here as well. Take us through some of the options that consumers have as well from an affordability perspective, things like being able to bundle the cost into the mortgage, being able to set up different types of payment plans for the solutions. Take us through what you guys have done in that regard.
Yeah, so what we've done is we've tried to break the home down into areas where we could make the most impact. So water heating as a starting point, geysers are very, very inefficient appliances. They use a lot of power. So we offer a very low cost entry point for homes if they just want to convert their geyser. We have a conversion solution for electric geysers to convert them to solar PV. And then with whole home solar or just that conversion, what we offer is access to the home loan. So you could apply to add the cost to your existing home loan. We also offer a product called an energy loan, which is a loan product that allows for customers to purchase at favorable interest rates, very much focused on affordability and spreading that cost over a longer period. And then also we offer a rental or subscription offer. So if customers don't want to invest in the system and purchase it, they can also rent or subscribe to a solar system, which is also maybe a little less burdensome on the pocket to get started.
Energy and carbon certificates now available through the Looksee platform for their solutions so that you can track exactly how much value your home is receiving from installing a solar solution. And we'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much to Executive Head of the Looksee platform at Standard Bank South Africa, Mark du Plessis, for joining us to take a look at their latest partnership with the South African Energy Development Institute and what it means for homeowners. This interview was brought to you by Looksee, powered by the Standard Bank Group. Flip the switch to solar and improve your home's energy efficiency with products and services from Looksee.
Welcome to Mzansi, where the vibe is always on, but the lights are off. Where we smile through dark times with the hope of a bright future. Where the grass seems greener on the other side, but we choose to go green here. Where Looksee helps improve your home's energy efficiency through quality products, solutions and services. Visit looksee.co.za to learn more about home energy efficiency. powered by Standard Bank. Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
Executive Lounge, where top leaders share their business insights and life lessons on SAFM.
Relax. You're okay. Your new Volvo plug-in hybrid will get you there and back again. And there again. And back again. Because you're at least 80 kilometers of electric range away from having to worry about petrol. Or the battery, which comes with an 8-year warranty. But it will keep you going for much, much longer than that. Test drive a Volvo plug-in hybrid.
It is Executive Lounge time on a Wednesday. We speak to executives and get to know them a little bit better beyond their responsibilities on a day-to-day basis. I'm joined on the line this week by the founder and chief executive officer at Hazile Group, Dr. Pindile Msomi, to get to know her a little bit better. Dr. Msomi, lovely having you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Bold is building legacy when the odds are stacked. What do you mean by that? Dr. Msomi? Ooh, it seems we have slight technical issues here. Let's see if we've got her.
Is it better now?
There we go. So, Dr. Msomi, do we have you?
Good evening. I'm good. Good evening, Jimmy. Good evening to your listeners. Thank you for having me.
Lovely to have you. Bold is building legacy when the odds are stacked. That's a mantra you live by. What do you mean by that?
It's basically saying, regardless of what you face, you need to look beyond your current circumstances to what you're going to leave as a hope for your own family, for communities, for South Africa and Africa as a whole. Because if you believe that your odds are stacking you to not move, to not try something new, to not innovate, then it means the future has no hope. So we are the future. People who are creating solutions now in businesses, entrepreneurs, people across different sectors are the future. Yes, somebody's going to have to take the baton and move on. But if we give up, so when odds are stacked against you, regardless of where you come from, I'm from a humble beginning of a 400,000 Soweto, but I'm beginning to build systems that are changing lives because I made a choice to say, regardless of how hard it is, how many times I fall, I want young people to see that leadership rooted in integrity doesn't come from silver spoon people. It comes from a self-love, compassion for yourself, for others, and what you believe you can do to transform others' lives.
Dr. Msomi, speaking of that belief, take me through your journey to obtaining your PhD. I mean, a doctor's in business administration is no easy feat, particularly when you're in an environment like South Africa where getting the cost of something like a master's, let alone the PhD, can be quite excessive. Take us through that journey, what you learnt on that journey, and what it's allowed you to be able to give back.
Thank you for that. So I did my MBA years ago, and I never thought I would want to do a doctorate or a DBA, a doctorate in business admin, because I've always thought I'll be a career-driven woman. I never thought I'll be an entrepreneur. So my MBA was really rooted not because I wanted to start a business, but because I was like, okay, I'm going to be an executive in a corporate environment. I need to understand how businesses operate. So when circumstances change and I rerouted my direction in terms of career to become an entrepreneur, I then fell in love with farming. As you, I think, probably read, Hazile Group is in your sustainability farming, so hydroponics. When I was doing that, I thought I need to know more about what sustainability and innovation means in this sector. I can't keep telling people I'm a hydroponics farmer when I do not know what it is, what challenges are there. What's next? A doctorate in business admin, because I wanted to really delve deep into understanding what the sector means for women like me, what it means for women generally who are Black in an industry that has not been dominated by a lot of people, because a lot of people are still shying away from hydroponics as a farming method. So I went to, again, Mill Park, where I did my MBA and I enrolled for the DBA. It took me 2.5 to 3 years. It was hard to, let alone find subjects, as we call them, people to interview who are in the same sector, same space, because I needed to speak to people who are doing farming, hydroponically or using agritech, as we call it. So it wasn't easy at all. I think I struggled for over 9 months to get subjects. I struggled to get our own government, agriculture department, to give me leads of women who are in the sector, because my thesis was about women who are using agritech to farm. It wasn't easy, but I'm glad I did it, because I got to learn more about what it is that I can do to innovate. And some of the solutions that we are currently building came from that learning. And I'm grateful to those women.
Dr. Msomi, you mentioned that your thesis was on women in farming, but I also know that you have a strong passion for empowering women and youth in underserved communities. I mean, everything from the Basadi Bakopane foundation that you built to the work that you do within the other businesses that you lead. Take me through how you manage to be an entrepreneur, to drive impact, to be able to manage more than one business. Many would say this is an overwhelming set of things that you've got on your plate.
Overwhelming is an understatement. First, entrepreneurship is not an easy road. So for you to couple it with a passion for trying to grow communities by teaching women to farm sustainably, I mean, like, Pindi, what is wrong with you? Over and above that, as you mentioned, so I've got a business called Acumen Consulting, which is around the sector of governance, ESG, and sustainability and governance. So it is quite a handful. But the good part is, and what I've learned is, somehow my businesses tend to feed off each other. What do I mean by that? Basadi Bakopane, apart from helping youth learning how to farm and do farming skills, I currently have two youth who are serving as people who are working as interns in my Acumind business, because it then exposes me, Basadi Bakopane exposes me to a number of people in communities who are in need of training, who are in need of learning. So it is one business feeding off each other by getting and exposing women, not only in farming, but in other sectors so as well. The Basadi Bakopane really started as more a philanthropy type of thing, but I'm redefining what it means, because for me, philanthropy is when you just give and don't empower people. But how we've innovated and changed it is we are empowering people to unlock their potential, not providing handouts, no, equipping women and youth with the skills, the confidence, and the resources that helps them become independent and create solutions that they can own. So yeah, it has been a fantastic journey. It's hectic. I don't have a 9-to-5. When people say they have 9-to-5, I'm like, what is that? So it is, it's quite empowering and it feels exhilarating. People are saying, don't you get exhausted? And I said, no, I manage my time well and I do sleep and I do go out on weekends. So I do manage my time well.
Dr. Msomi, when you are going out on weekends, where do you de-stress? Do you have a particular place that you love visiting? Do you have a particular thing you like doing from an activity point of view?
I am a yogi, so I do quite a lot of yoga. I'm not an avid runner, so those who know me will be like, oh, she's lying. She walks for 5 kilometers and says, we need to sit down now, we're tired and stop. But I'm more of a lifestyle person. So if there is a market that has some little arty things that they're selling, if I'm going to go there and support other proud South African brands who are selling some scented candles and things, those are my kind of wind down type of scenarios, unless we are doing a short left with my kids who are part of the Hazle group, because I built that company specifically to leave it as a legacy for my children. So that is what I do. So you'll find me at Bubbly's, you'll find me at markets, you'll find me at little shopaholic things where you have only South African brands being showcased, be it wine. So that is just to me. I have a mixed bag, like my businesses, which I have a mixed bag too.
Building a legacy and ensuring that along the way you're leaving enough of an impact to empower the next generation to take the baton on from you. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much to Dr. Pindi Limsomi, an inspiration, and our executive for this week's Executive Lounge.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
And just like that, folks, that's the update for today. If you've missed any of our conversations, they are obviously going to be made available as podcasts for you to be able to catch up on at your leisure. It is coming up to 7 o'clock, which means we're going to get ready to cross back to Greg Hose and the SAFM news team. They will, of course, be followed by Michael Abramson and the top sport team. From my side, we'll be bringing you the latest updates out of the United States as they report their jobs numbers, but that'll be probably later this week. For now, good night.